This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santel, sitting in for Maggie on this first day of January of 2025, the first day of the new year when, regrettably, a time of celebration, we are instead witnessing these horrific attacks around our nation, specifically in New Orleans, as investigators continue to piece together that horrific event there, and also New York, other places throughout our nation, across our planet, when violence continues to upset the safety and the security and the well-being that all human beings should enjoy. We commission ourselves to do better in 2025 so that on January 1 of 2026, a year from now, we can truly celebrate a year of some renewed safety and security for all of us. In that connection, at the end of the past year of 2024, we also had a Chief Justice talking about those kinds of issues. At the end of every year, the Chief Justice issues a report on the judiciary, the state of the judiciary, if you will, talking about the things that are accomplished this past year. No difference, no departure from that tradition. John Roberts, the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, issuing this report and talking in particular about threats to the judicial system. He's writing about disgruntled lawmakers and litigants who pose a threat to judicial independence. He didn't name anyone specifically when he admonished public officials for intimidating judges, but we can tell probably who he was talking about. The report that was published just earlier this week delved into the dangers posed by disgruntled politicians and litigants against judges and the wider judicial system. Roberts said in his report that some of the judicial decisions that happen are egregiously wrong, those are his words, and merit pushback, but that not all actors engage in informed criticism. And by actors, of course, he's talking about people who would criticize unfairly the actions of justices and judges. He wrote this. He said, "I feel compelled to address four areas of legitimate activity that, in my view, do threaten the independence of judges on which the rule of law depends. And those are violence, intimidation, disinformation, and threats to defy lawfully entered judgments." He wrote, "Disappointed litigants rage at judicial decisions on the internet, urging readers to send a message to the judge." That sounds candidly like what Donald Trump has done, as we know well. "They falsely claim that the judge had it in for them because of the judge's race, gender, or ethnicity, or the political party of the president who appointed the judge." This is all from the pen of the Chief Justice. "Trump, Donald Trump, our next president, has very notably clashed with judges presiding over many of the cases against him, including that one that we just talked about that is involving E. Jean Carroll, but also other cases, his criminal matters as well. He was repeatedly fined for violating the orders restricting his public statements during that New York hush money case. He was held in contempt of court after criticizing the Supreme Court during an interview with Real America's Voice in April." And so all of that, although now he is not mentioned by name, plainly the target of the Chief Justice. John Roberts admonishes public officials for attempting to intimidate judges, though, again, he didn't name any of them by name. Public officials, he said, certainly have a right to criticize the work of the judiciary, but they should be mindful that intemperance in their statements when it comes to judges may prompt dangerous reactions by others. Chief Justice admonished some lawmakers for trying to defy his decisions. Elected officials from across the political spectrum have raised the specter of open disregard for federal court rulings. And of course, all of that comes in the wake of continued reporting on ethical problems inside the Supreme Court as well. The Judiciary Committee of the United States Senate issuing just this past week another report commenting generally upon the Supreme Court and judges in particular, that including Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito, identifying additional instances in which Clarence Thomas did not report gifts he received from Harlan Crowe. And all of that, of course, taking place inside this larger discussion about whether or not there should be an enforceable code of ethics. Right now, there's a set of standards and practices, but not enforceable by anyone aside from the judges themselves, the justices themselves, who may choose to take that on. Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts railing against some of the criticism against him, some of it perhaps legitimate, some of it not perhaps legitimate, but nonetheless, in the public domain now for our general consumption as the Supreme Court, of course, continues to entertain oral arguments in this month of January and in February, and then presumably issuing many opinions in the coming months, including June and July, about many, many issues that affect our lives and livelihoods. Supreme Court in 2025 plainly will continue to be a lot of focus of discussion here on the Maggie Dawn Show, on other broadcasts of civic media. Finally, on this first day of the new year, we think, of course, about the 39th president of the United States of America, James Earl Carter. He was born on October 1 of 1924, and of course, as you know, he died on December 29th. He was an American politician, and he was also a humanitarian. He was the 39th president of the United States of America, that tenure, 1977, elected in 1976 to 1981. He was undeniably a Democrat. He served from 1963 to 1967 in the Georgia State Senate, 1971 to 1975 as the 76th governor of the state of Georgia. And of course, as you know well, he was the longest living president in United States history, the first to live to the age of 100. He was born in Plains, Georgia, as you also well know, which is also where he died. He graduated from the U.S. Naval Academy in 1946, joined the submarine service as a part of his commission. He married Rosalind Smith. They worked closely together throughout their lives. Again, part of the history of Jimmy Carter in our nation's lives. He returned home after his military service and revived his family's peanut growing business. Opposing racial segregation, Jimmy Carter was a big advocate for the growing civil rights movement that engendered an awful lot of criticism at the time. He supported that. He became an activist within the Democratic Party there in the state of Georgia. After serving in the Senate there and then as governor, he ran for president, that in 1976. He was undeniably a dark horse for that position. He was not well known outside of Georgia. He won the Democratic nomination in 1976 and narrowly defeated the incumbent president, Gerald Ford, in that election of that year, the 1976 presidential election. Among other things that he did, he pardoned all Vietnam War draft evaders on his second day in office. He created a national energy policy that included conservation and price control and new technology. And in that connection, Jimmy Carter was also a great advocate for the environment and preserving our resources. He was sometimes ridiculed for this, but he was in many ways before his time when he came to advocating that all Americans can do things to preserve the future of our nation and our world when it comes to energy policy. And Carter, I think you've got some audio again of Jimmy Carter speaking to the nation, encouraging us to be mindful about energy then in the late 1970s, and certainly words to this day that are important.
Oh, yeah, here we go. Jimmy Carter.
Due to the energy crisis in the U.S., President Carter decided to give this notable speech known as the Crisis of Confidence speech in July of 1979.
To further conserve energy, I'm proposing tonight an extra $10 billion over the next decade to strengthen our public transportation systems. And I'm asking you for your good and for your nation's security to take no unnecessary trips, to use carpools or public transportation whenever you can, to park your car one extra day per week, to obey the speed limit, and to set your thermostats to save fuel. Every act of energy conservation like this is more than just common sense. I tell you, it is an act of patriotism.
That's Jimmy Carter addressing the nation. And for that speech that speaks to us even today in 2025, this first day of the new year, getting a fair amount of pushback on that and suggesting that his recommendations about how we can all be personally responsible for our future, that he got an awful lot of ridicule for that and suggested that things like wearing a sweater and doing other things, again, like turning down the thermostat and thinking about your driving practices, all those very practical things, that's the Jimmy Carter of that time that ask all of us to do things committed to our nation as a group of people who believe in its future. I will tell you, as a point of personal observation here, that I had the great honor in the summer of 1980 to witness Jimmy Carter's commitment to the future of our nation, energy efficiency, and climate issues when I served as, yes, I was very young at the time, a staff intern in the West Wing of the White House in the summer of 1980. Now, Jimmy Carter would go on, of course, as I said, to accept the presidential nomination once again in 1980 of the Democratic Party. He would lose very notably, in a major way to Ronald Reagan in the course of that campaign. But in the summer of 1980, that Jimmy Carter, who was campaigning even at that period of time, the summer of 1980, Jimmy Carter was concerned about energy. Perhaps again today, the single biggest issue that faces not only our leaders here in the United States, but around the nation. I was an intern in the Carter White House in those months of the summer of 1980. And specifically, I worked for a woman named Erica Ward, and she was, among others, an assistant to Stuart Eisenstadt, who was the president's domestic affairs and policy advisor at the time. Also worked for a fellow named Bert Karp. He was a deputy assistant to the president for domestic policies and affairs at that time. And in that time, I recall very well that the president, Jimmy Carter, was committed to the future of the nation. I was honored on July 22nd of 1980 to be present when on the South Lawn of the White House, the president, Jimmy Carter, presented the President's Awards for Energy Efficiency, identifying entities and businesses and other groups that had been at the forefront of this effort to try to keep our nation's energy in place. Of course, this was a time when gas prices were high, when there was a concern about the future sources of oil and energy generally in America. He was awarding those entities way back in 1980. They're already thinking about the future of our nation. He awarded those groups, those entities, those individuals who were concerned about a future, and a future also that focused upon climate. On June 30th of 1980, a few weeks before that, he also signed the Energy Security Act of 1980. And once again, I was honored. It remains one of the great honors and recollections of my life to be president again on the South Lawn of the White House when this president, Jimmy Carter, signed the Energy Security Act of 1980. All sorts of policies and procedures that were, again, passed by the Congress, enforced by the executive branch, and endorsed in a major way by this president at that time. Forward thinking, he could not possibly have imagined, again, what would happen in 2024, 2025, and the years of recent times when we have come again to appreciate the significance of climate and energy and the ways of using energy responsibly for future generations. Jimmy Carter was ahead of his time in 1980. And he made this a part of his campaign, not only in 1976, but also in 1980, when he campaigned unsuccessfully for the presidency going ahead. One of the great experiences of my lifetime, serving as an intern in the Jimmy Carter White House in the summer of 1980. I was headed off to law school that fall. Jimmy Carter, of course, again, one of the hugely significant presidents in our nation's history. And as we continue to discuss him in memorial of his tenure on this planet and as our president, we're going to be addressing in particular this notion that somehow his presidency was not successful and that his post-presidency was more successful. We'll take that up and determine whether or not that's true, according to an awful lot of people who were there at the time and who have since had the time to evaluate that. All of that as the Maggie Dawn Show continues here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media.